Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Welcome to As It Is, a program from VOA Learning English. Today, we again visit the famous Route 66, which travels from America's Midwest all the way to California on the West Coast. Stunning landscapes, quirky attractions, historic architecture, and brightly lit motel signs surround Route 66. But it is the people along the way who shape the character of what is sometimes called the Mother Road. VOA Learning English traveled the entire length of Route 66. In each state, in each city, and at each stop, we met people who are connected to the Mother Road. Some of those people have grown up right along the road. Others moved there later in life to open a business. And some were just passing through. So, listen as Ashley Thompson and Katie Weaver paint a picture of the Mother Road with words.
For decades, the Can-O-Tex service station sat abandoned along Main Street in Galena, Kansas. It was one of the many abandoned businesses along the historic U.S. Route 66. When the road was decommissioned in the 1980s, entire communities disappeared. But in 2007, Can-O-Tex's fate changed when four local women purchased it and opened Four Women on the Route. They created a gift shop and tourist center for modern-day Route 66 travelers. Melba Rigg was one of the women. She and the other original owners helped revitalize Galena's section of Route 66. Today, the shop is known as Cars on the Route. The new name plays on the popular 2006 animated film Cars, which featured several stops along Route 66. Melba is better known as Melba the Mouth. Just listen to her speak, and you will understand how she earned this nickname.
And they call me the Mouth because I do have a tendency to talk a little bit faster. I'm swimming down with Julie Funfell. Actually, I do talk this fast, but talk a little bit faster. I only had one cup of coffee this morning. Everybody in my family is 6 foot 1, 6 foot 2.
At Cars on the Route, Melba meets tourists from all over the world. And she suggests the travelers visit other shops along the road. Melba calls the people who live along Route 66 one big family.
We want to support one another. We're just like a big old family. Route 66 is a big old family. And you got your troublemakers and you got your crazies, I mean, you know, and you got your sweethearts and you got, yeah. And there's a lot of us out here that we're trying to get the young kids involved in Route 66.
Melba knew all about one member of that Route 66 family, Jeannie Tate. And we just happened to have met Jeannie in a bowling alley the night before.
Jeannie Tate has lived her whole life in Lebanon, Missouri. Route 66 goes right through her small town. Locals know Jeannie as an excellent bowler. She practices at Starlight Lanes, a bowling alley right along the Mother Road. A photograph of Jeannie hangs on the wall. The bowling alley opened back in the 1950s. It sits across the street from the family-run Munger Moss Motel, where Route 66 travelers have been staying since 1946. Jeannie Tate has clear memories of the Mother Road in its heyday.
I'm amazed that we could even travel the road as narrow as it was. And of course now, and the cars back then were so huge. You know, they didn't have these little compact cars. They had these big, long, wide Cadillacs.
She says Route 66 created business and brought travelers to her small town.
We just heard from Jeannie Tate, who lived in Lebanon, Missouri all her life. Next, we hear from someone who came from the West Coast to the town of Elk City, Oklahoma, where motorcycles are a big deal.
Stephanie tends bar at Knucklehead Reds in Elk City, Oklahoma. She tells us that the name is for the owner, who has red hair. Merriam-Webster's dictionary defines knucklehead as a stupid person, but it is also the name of a kind of Harley-Davidson motorcycle engine. And Knucklehead Reds is definitely a biker-friendly bar. So friendly, Stephanie says, that visitors often drive their bikes right through the front door and park them on the dance floor. The walls at Knucklehead Reds are covered with gun rights posters and big photographs of country music stars. Stephanie is a transplant from Southern California. She says she loves Elk City and does not miss the West Coast. A brightly colored sign that reads Midpoint Cafe stands tall above the flat landscape in Adrian, Texas. The cafe is at the geographical midpoint of Route 66. It opened in 1928. During Route 66's heyday, it operated 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Today, the friendly cafe serves coffee and food. It has become famous worldwide for its hospitality and its ugly crust pies. Fran Hauser owned Midpoint Cafe from 1990 to 2012. She is old friends with Melba the Mouth. The two share Cars fame. Fran herself was the inspiration for the character Flo in the film. Fran decided to retire in 2012 and sold Midpoint Cafe, but she soon missed meeting people from around the world. So she opened another business right next to the cafe, Sunflower Station. The small shop is a great place to buy gifts and try out some of Fran's baked goods. Fran is back in action, talking with international tourists and sharing her love of Route 66. Fran often tells her visitors to be sure to visit the 66 to Cali shop on the Santa Monica Pier.
Fran Hauser's friend, Dan Rice, is the owner of that Los Angeles business. He opened 66 to Cali in 2009. Rice raises funds and awareness about historic Route 66 to help protect and revive the Mother Road. The businessman has traveled the entire route 29 times. Rice knows many of the business owners and residents along the way. He meets Route 66 travelers every day at his shop. Dan Rice says it is the shared connection among all those people that will help keep Route 66 alive.
Thanks to Ashley Thompson and Katie Weaver for that story about America's Mother Road. That's today's As It Is program from VOA Learning English.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
F- from VOA Learning English. This is in the news. The Islamic State terrorist group says it is responsible for an attack on a Shiite Muslim religious center in northern Bangladesh on Thursday. One person was killed and three were injured in the attack. Gunmen shot people praying at the mosque in Bogra, which is about 200 kilometers northwest of Dhaka. Arifur Rahman Mondal is a police official in Bogra. He spoke to VOA about the attack by telephone. He said the gunman entered the mosque and began shooting worshippers. He says four people were shot and taken to the hospital. The muezzin, or the person who calls Muslims to prayers, died at the hospital. Mondal told VOA, "We have already launched a countrywide operation to hunt out the assailants." The muezzin was 70-year-old Muazzim Hossein. Television stations in the area reported the three injured men were seriously wounded. Mohammed Ukil is a family member of the muezzin. He said the attackers appeared to be worshippers. He said when the worshippers bowed in prayer, the attackers shot their weapons from the back of the mosque. Then they ran away, he says. This is the second attack on the small Shiite community. Last month, a bomb exploded at a gathering there of Shiite Muslims. Two people were killed. Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina strongly criticized the attackers. "A good Muslim can never resort to terrorism. The gunman who attacked the worshippers at the mosque cannot be called Muslim. In the name of religion, these perverts are killing people, indulging in terrorism, and bringing a bad name to Islam." Officials in Bangladesh are worried about an increase in the number of militant Islamists in the country. Between February and October, four secular or non-religious writers and one publisher were killed in Bangladesh. They publish their opinions on the internet. Police say they were murdered by Ansarullah Bangla Team, a strict Islamist group. In recent weeks, gunmen also killed two foreigners, an Italian aid worker, and a Japanese farming expert, in separate attacks. The Islamic State terrorist group claimed responsibility for those attacks and for the bomb attack on the Shiite gathering. Officials say Islamic State terrorists have claimed responsibility for recent attacks in the country. But those officials blame the opposition Bangladesh Nationalist Party and its ally Jamaat-e-Islami for the attacks. On Thursday, police said the Jamaatul Mujahideen Bangladesh group carried out the attack on the Shiite religious gathering last month. The Islamist group has been banned. Police also said they shot and killed the group's leader during a raid on Wednesday. They killed another commander during the raid as well. They also said they arrested five members of the group suspected of being involved in the bombing. About 96% of the 149 million Muslims in Bangladesh are Sunni. The rest are Shiites. And that's in the news from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Now, the special English program, American Stories. Welcome to the fourth and last part of our program, A Princess of Mars. The story is from a series of books by Edgar Rice Burroughs. Last week, we told how John Carter observed a fierce battle between the green Martians and a race of red human-like creatures. He also saw the beautiful Princess Deja Thoris being captured after the battle. A short time later, John Carter, the princess, and their friend, the green Martian woman Sola, attempt to escape rather than face death. The princess and Sola must flee while John Carter tries to slow the green warriors who are chasing them. John Carter continues to tell what happens in Edgar Rice Burroughs' story, A Princess of Mars.
The huge green warrior Tars Tarkas came slowly toward me with his thin sword. I backed away. I did not want to fight him. I did not wish his death. He had been as kind to me as a green Martian can be. As I stood watching him, a rifle fired in the distance. Then another. And another. Tars Tarkas and his warriors were under attack from another tribe of green warriors. Within seconds, a terrible battle raged. As I watched, three of the attackers fell on Tars Tarkas. He killed one and was fighting with the other two when he slipped and fell. I ran to his aid, swinging my sword. He was on his feet. Shoulder to shoulder, we fought against the attackers. They finally withdrew after an hour of fierce fighting.
John Carter, I think I understand the meaning of the word friend. You saved my life when I was about to take yours. From this day, you are no longer a captive among our people, but a leader and great warrior among us.
There was a smile on his face. Once again, he took off a metal band from his arm and gave it to me.
I have a question for you, John Carter. I understand why you took the red woman with you. But why did Sola leave her people and go with you?
She did not want to see me or the princess harmed. She does not like the great games held by your people where captives are led to die. She knows if she is caught, she too will die in the games. She told me she hates the games because her mother died there.
What? How could she know her mother?
She told me her mother was killed in the games because she had hidden the egg that produced her. Her mother hid Sola among other children before she was captured. Sola said she was a kind woman, not like others of your tribe. Tars Tarkas grew angry as I was speaking, but I could see past his anger. I could see pain in his eyes. I immediately knew Sola's great secret. I have a question for you, Tars Tarkas. Did you know Sola's mother?
Yes, and if I could have, I would have prevented her death. I know this story to be true. I have always known the woman who died in those games had a child. I never knew the child. I do now. Solah is also my child.
For 3 days, we followed the trail left by the Princess Deja Torres, Solah, and poor, ugly Wula. At last, we could see them in the distance. Their animal could no longer be ridden. They were talking. When we came near, Wula turned to fight us. I slowly walked to him with my hand out. Solah was standing nearby. She was armed and prepared to fight. The princess was lying next to her feet. Solah, what is wrong with the princess?
She has been crying much these past few days, John Carter. We believed you died so we could escape. The thought of your death was very heavy on this woman, my friend Deja Thoris. Come and tell her you are among the living. Perhaps that will stop her crying.
I walked to where the Princess Deja Thoris was lying on the ground. She looked at me with eyes that were red from crying. Princess, you are no longer in danger. Tars Tarkas has come with me as a friend. He and his warriors will help to see you safely home. And Solah, I would have you greet your father, Tars Tarkas, a great leader among your people. Your secret no longer means death to anyone. He already knows you are his daughter. The two of you have nothing to fear. Solah turned and looked at Tars Tarkas. She held out her hand. He took it. It was a new beginning for them.
I know our world has never before seen anyone like you, John Carter. Can it be that all Earthmen are like you? I was alone, a stranger, hunted, threatened. Yet you would freely give your life to save me. You come to me now with a tribe of green warriors who offer their friendship. You are no longer a captive, but wear the medal of great rank among their people. No man has ever done this.
Princess, I have done many strange things in my life, many things much smarter men would not have done. And now, before my courage fails, I would ask you to be mine in marriage. She smiled at me for a moment, and then her dark eyes flashed in the evening light.
You have no need of your courage, John Carter, because you already knew the answer before you asked the question.
Several days later, we reached the city of Helium. At first, the red men of Helium thought we were an attacking army. But they soon saw their princess. We were greeted with great joy. Tars Tarkas and his green warriors caused the greatest excitement. This huge group of green warriors entered the city as friends and allies. I soon met Tardos Mors, the grandfather of Deja Thoris. He tried several times to thank me for saving the life of the princess, but tears filled his eyes, and he could not speak.
F-
For 9 years, I served in the government and fought in the armies of Helium as a prince of the royal family. It was a happy time. The Princess Deja Thoris and I were expecting a child. Then, one day, a soldier returned from a long flight. When he landed, he hurried to the great meeting room. Tardos Mors met with the soldier and reported that every creature on the planet had but 3 days to live. He said the great machines that produced the atmosphere on the planet had stopped producing oxygen. He said no one knew why this had happened, but there was nothing that could be done. The air grew thin within a day. Many people could do nothing but sleep. I watched as my princess was slowly dying. I had to try something. I could still move with great difficulty. I went to our airport and chose a fast aircraft. I flew as fast as I could to the building that produced the atmosphere of the planet. Workers were trying to enter. I tried to help. With a great effort, I opened a hole. I grew very weak. I asked one of the workers if he could start the engines. He said he would try. I fell asleep on the ground. It was dark when I opened my eyes again. My clothing felt stiff and strange. I sat up. I could see light from an opening. I walked outside. The land looked strange to me. I looked up to the sky and saw the red planet Mars. I was once again on Earth in the desert of Arizona. I cried out with deep emotion. Did the worker reach the machines to renew the atmosphere? Did the air reach the people of that planet in time to save them? Was my Princess Deja Thoris alive, or did she lie cold in death? For 10 years now, I have watched the night sky, looking for an answer. I believe she and our child are waiting there for me. Something tells me that I shall soon know.
You have been listening to the special English program, American Stories. Shep O'Neill was the voice of John Carter. Steve Ember was Tars Tarkas. Barbara Klein was Sola. And Gwen Uten was Princess Deja Thoris. This story was adapted for Special English by Paul Thompson. It was produced by Paul Thompson and Mario Ritter. Listen again next week for another American story in VOA Special English.